All right, make sure you're in fellowship as here we are looking at the test set before Hagar that involves also Ishmael, her son, as they are on the verge of death by dehydration. And God responds in regards to the voice of Ishmael, which points to the fact that God honors His word. And if it so benefits negative volition, thus it does, as the ultimate reason that Ishmael is delivered from death is because of the promise given Hagar and Abraham in regards to his future and life. For Hagar, she should have kept a doctrine in front of her and maintained faith rest, but she succumbs to sin fear in this situation and run by her emotions. And the angel of God, is none other than Yahweh, speaks to her in an audible form, not physically here, as it was in the previous situation with Hagar, and calls from heaven and wants to know what her problem is, in a way that obviously is designed to reprove her that really there's no excuse for this emotional meltdown that she is engaged in at this point in time. And he then gives her the doctrine to first and foremost get a grip on her SCA to stop fearing in regards to the situation. That is doing nothing more than leading her emotions and driving them and feeding them. And to remember the doctrine associated in regards to Ishmael, first and foremost, that God has heard is a reminder of His very name, that God proclaimed he would be called Ishmael, for God having given heed in regards to Hagar's situation back then with respect to Sarah in that respect. And that it doesn't make any difference whether God is physically manifesting himself as he did in the form of Christophany in the first situation with Hagar, or whether it is simply Bible doctrine spoken from heaven in this regards, that he is always involved in regards to her life. And he's not limited, as others might be, with respect to making provision of deliverance for them in this particular situation. And point 50, where we left off, page 17 of our notes, it is a doctrinal reminder that God is always near and never detached from all she, Hagar, and her son Ishmael do. And thus, there is no real excuse for her SCA episode. It's a matter of simply succumbing to the sin nature and failing to embrace the promises and looking to God to, all right, we're in the situation without some help here, you know, we're going to die. And let God's hand deliver otherwise in that respect. So God has heard. Is a reminder that he's always near, he is omnipresent, and he's omniscient, never detached, in regards to all that we as believers, her as the example, face in regards to our lives. And when we succumb to our SCA, really is a lack of embracing doctrine and letting the SCA have its way rather than letting doctrine guide us and direct us and rule over our lives at any given point in time in that respect. 51, God always has control of the situation. God's always in control. He's never out of control. He's never out of step, never out of focus, never distracted. Every aspect of life. That's the God we serve. Whether we're here, or whether we're in our simply in our souls in phase three, he's always in control. 52, now verse 18, assumes Hagar's spiritual reorientation at hand. it assumes her reorientation at hand and further supplies the encouragement and pertinent promised doctrine to the occasion. As he then commands her, "Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him." 53, the command "arise," literally "stand," "kum" in the Hebrew, illustrates here overcoming her SCA emotions. And the commands to lift up the lad and hold him by the hand, looking to her authoritative role now as her mother, as that has been transferred to her. An example to Ishmael, an application of faith rest to the situation. She's got the doctrine, she should be the witness. And with the doctrinal astuteness, positive volition, and the authority of the situation, this being her child, she really has now the responsibility to set the example and to make the applications in regards to the situation at hand. If you're an authority in life, you're on doctrine, and supposedly you're adjusted to doctrine, it's your responsibility to take situations in hand and make the proper, ensure to make the proper application in this regards. All this stuff is sloughing it off in regards to the subordinates, etc. Otherwise, when it's really your responsibility, that's malarkey. That is nothing but a spiritual coward's way out. She's a female. She's a mother, but she's the authority in this case. And she is to go over, and she's to get a grip on her SCA and make the right application in this regards. And go over there and pick up her kid and get him up, rush him off, see. And start faith wrestling like she should. And put this matter in God's hand. Make the proper prayers. Even though we see no actual sign of her praying. And to set the example in regards to the situation. 54, she is to get control of her emotions and take charge of the situation with application. She's got to make application rather than sitting around bemoaning the fact. Obviously, if physically she was incapable, okay, I don't understand. But she's not. And obviously that she can pick him back up on his feet says that there's enough life to make the right application in this respect. Don't let your SCA convince you just to roll over and give up. That will do you no good. It will do nothing more than aggravate the situation at hand. And then to expect the subordinates of our lives to carry the weight otherwise, that's just as repulsive. The motivating cause for application here is the fulfillment of the promise of Bible doctrine. For I will make a great nation of him. The doctrine states and gives us promises that's designed to help stay motivated in regards to its very application. It's like God says, I'll make provision for all living grace matters and things of this nature if you put doctrine first. See? You make the application, and all these things will come about. Here, the motivation is the doctrine at hand that God has a plan for Ishmael. It's a plan to start a bunch of peoples and tribes that are going to be hostile to Israel, his nation, ultimately. But he still has a plan. And this shows that God's in control of history. See? Instead of worrying about all the different avenues and things that people will get involved in, engaged in, etc., remember one thing, God's always in control. And the only thing that you really need to be concerned about is the doctrine in front of you. And to make that application. Other things will take care of themselves. But too often, RSVA, and it's usually driven by fear, will convince us that, no. I've got to get under the energy of the flesh. I've got to drum these things up. I've got to violate doctrine here, here, and here to make this work. See? Well, that BS symbol keeps shooting up right in front of my eyes every time I think about these things. It's what it is. No. This is part of growing up spiritually. Yeah. We all fail. I failed in this area. How many times? I couldn't count. But that doesn't make it right. And that's part of growing up and garnishing our will and strength in doctrine and looking to God to provide for us in all things. See? Even the most dire things. He knows what's going on. He knows all the ins and outs, even better than we do. See? And so here, the doctrine she should have been holding on to is the promise of God in regards to the fact, well, he can't die yet. He may have a scratchy throat from not having any water for a while, but he can't die yet because God promised this. See? Then in verse 19, here the spiritual parallels with physical orientation. As God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. There it was all the time. Just like there was God all the time. See? Often the answer is right in front of us, but we're so wrapped up in regards to everything else around us, we're blind to it sometimes. Yeah, I've been there and done that too. 57, both the spiritual and physical is a result of divine providence in orientation. That is God assisting the believer when they orient the Bible doctrine to see things clearly. When you run under your SCA, you run under your emotions, it just muddies the water in regards to trying to think things out and think things through. But when you stay in fellowship and look to God, keep obviously shooting up the prayers, etc., etc., then God will show you clearly the direction to take. And sometimes that direction is, you know, just stay put or whatever for the time being until doors are open or whatever. For here, she orients, and by implication that he opened her eyes, shows that, okay, I'm hearing the words, getting a grip. And upon that reorientation, all of a sudden, there it is. Her life wasn't without purpose, without meaning, without goal, as she let it all of a sudden get a hold of her as she was kicked out of Abraham's house and wandering in the wilderness. See. Now God had a purpose for it, still has a purpose for her. '58, not only did God renew His promises here, He makes provision in regards to Hagar and Ishmael. And then He makes provision, which the provision, if you will, was already anticipated by God and available. Sometimes we just don't want to make the application, or we don't make the application. We look elsewhere rather than looking to God's plan, putting the doctrine in His priorities and saying, all right, and here's what He's opening, the doors, and et cetera, et cetera. 59, had well been there all the time, yet in her grief and SCA fear, she failed to be observant. That's what the SCA loves to do. It loves to distract us from the realities of God's plan in our life. 60, this reflects the blinding nature of the SCA to the reality of God's plan in her life. SCA gets under control. Operation Human Viewpoint kicks in. I don't want to see my boy die. God says, well, you're not. Get a grip. And obviously, sitting here in a nice air-conditioning building and having plenty to drink, it's easy enough for me to say. Sometimes you have to put yourself in other people's tests to really appreciate, you know, not that you have to go out and reinvent it, but to think about it. And obviously, that would have been a tough test for anybody, especially for a mother and her child. But she still has the supreme authority that's on her side. That's God and His promise of Bible doctrine in her life. 61, Hagar follows through in application. See, she has to make the application now. Just because the well is there doesn't resolve the situation. It just makes the provision to resolve it. And he went, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Problem solved. Problem solved. 62, her simplistic actions are contrasted to the convoluted perception brought about by her fear. The simple action as it's described. She saw the well. She went over, filled up the skin, gave him a drink. And that is contrasted to the emotional upheaval that she was going through previously. And 63, point out how often the SCA exaggerates the nature of our tests. The SCA will almost always take that test and make it more severe than usually what it is. It loves to inflate. The SCA often has a self-pity grid. And it loves to inflate things. It's weird. The flesh is weird. All you got to do is live in the world for a while and you just see how weird it is. Well, we all are made of flesh. So this is part of our inward battle that we got to deal with. 64, after a vivid, scenic narrative then, in regards to the passage, the narrator then sums up the rest of Ishmael's life in verses 20 and 21. He was with the lad, he grew, lived in the wilderness, became an archer. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So he sums up the life of Ishmael, in addition to the doctrine already given. 60, and there'll be some more that comes out later. 66, and in 1612, we have the prediction of Ishmael's character and future nomadic life. Again, he's going to be a wild individual. If you're at the cosmos, he's probably one of those kind of guys you want to hang out with and party with. So, a wild ass of a man. A general hellraiser, you know, devil may care, probably individuals, how you tend to picture him, and willing to throw his weight around according to his own abilities and capabilities. 67, verse 21 records the fulfillment of that prediction. He lived in the wilderness and became an archer. Yishav, Bet, Ha, Midabar, Val, Haya, Rabah, Kashashaf. 68, his skill as a bowman refers to his hunting prowess and obviously skill as a warrior. Probably your ancient sniper type. Bow and arrow gives you that ability more so than probably other weapons of choice back then. But a great hunter, and obviously would be one that could protect himself, family, otherwise. 69, the wilderness of Paran is identified with the high limestone plateau of Et-Tid, the Tel Et-Tid, stretching from the southwest of the Dead Sea to Sinai along the west side of the Aqaba, Gulf of Aqaba. Let's see. Back on our map, here shows Paran, Gulf of Aqaba. Here in the Sinai Peninsula. Okay, I guess I didn't want to keep that there. That's where this map puts it, in that general location somewhere. It was this region. It was in this region that the descendants then would habitate, his sons, etc. 71. Normally, it was a father that arranged then the marriage for his son in a normal circumstance situation. Here, one this situation has changed, and the mother is now in charge of the son and would have to take up the slack for not having a live-in father. 72, the last glimpse of Hagar here shows her manfully shouldering the full responsibility for her son's future destiny and welfare. His mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So she is able to pull her weight and execute as necessary that which otherwise would have been handled by the father of the house, the paternal parent. 73, her faith in the promises enunciated in Genesis 16 and our verse 18 prompted her to fulfill her role in this task. She kept her vision, her focus by all implications. 74, this reference to Ishmael marrying prepares the way for the list of Ishmael's sons then that will be listed when we get to chapter 25, verses 12 through 18. 75, as Hagar looked to Egypt, her native homeland, so Abraham looked to his homeland in Mesopotamia for a wife for Isaac. So there's kind of a parallel in the contrast between the two, even though they're a part of 24:4. 76, though separated from her husband, we find Hagar acting in the best tradition of the faith and practice of her husband Abraham, doing as she would envision him doing, if you will. 77, Hagar's faith under adverse circumstances is remarkable, and she remains an unsung hero of biblical lore. Probably not often enough given credit, but obviously the eternal life niche will take up any slack in that regards in time. But by all indications, she was a believer. We've already pointed all this out. She was a positive believer. And just because she had a different niche, ultimately, than that destined for Abraham and Sarah, does not diminish that fact. 78, as with Abraham and Sarah, we see with her a mixture of faith and doubt and testing and deliverance that characterizes the human condition in believer's life. That's life in and of itself. We all have our moments or days or whatever. 79, above all, it proves God dependable and gracious towards his own and complete commitment to fulfillment of his word to ensure the livelihood of Ishmael as promised in Bible doctrine in that respect. All right? Well, we'll just leave the text there, and we'll set up for our observance of the Lord's table.